Hi, everybody. Welcome to 100 Year Real Estate Investor. We are hosts, Jake and Gino, and this is a show dedicated to long-term personal financial engineering. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good. You said that we have a brother from another mother on this show. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, please?
So, you know, he's kind of like a distant cousin, you know, kind of thing. He's sort of in the space, but it's different. And you know, we don't venture into his, you know, little territory, and he doesn't, I don't know if he ventures into ours, but we'll find out. So, regardless, you know, he's a true success story, an inspirational leader who has achieved financial freedom in record time. He dropped out of high school. And this is what I'm talking about. I was this close. I made it through, though. So we were very, very much on the same page. He had no knowledge of business, entrepreneurship, but went on to turn his negative net worth into financial freedom in just 2.5 years. So without further ado, Bryce Robertson, welcome to the show.
G'day, guys. Welcome to be. I'm glad to be here.
So let's hear about the story, though. You know, not a huge success in school, but you're able to turn that around. Talk about the business journey early on.
Yeah, mate. So, you know, got to near the end of high school, realized that there was no way I was going to university. I just wasn't vibing it. But at the time, I had no business or entrepreneur influences. So I went out and got what I thought was the highest paying job, an apprenticeship as a steel fabricator welder. So I did a 5-year apprenticeship in 3.5 years. And then I left Brisbane, my hometown, to go out to Western Australia and work in the underground gold mines. And I worked like 12, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, 8 weeks on, 1 week off. And I basically did that for about 2 years in Western Australia and Northern Territory. Because in my early 20s, I had a dream that I wanted to travel the world. And that enabled me to save up a little bit of money to get started on that venture. And then in my early 20s, I left and I ended up in my first base camp, which was London, England, where, I would work 10, 12 hours a day, 5, 7 days a week, 3, 4 months at a time. And then I'd go traveling for Europe pretty much until my money ran out. And then I would come back, save more money, go travel down in Africa. And I did the whole UK, Europe and Africa cycle for 3 years. And after that, I wanted to change the scenery. I went from the UK over to...
How do you get a change of scenery from that? It sounds like it was constant change of scenery.
It was. But I was living in like 12 million people in London.
Right? Holy shit.
And so yeah. I went to 5,000 people in a small ski village called Fernie in British Columbia, Canada. I wanted to go there and experience a snowboarding season, but I loved it so much being in the mountains there. I ended up staying for 2 years and I ended up starting my own gig. I didn't know they had coal mines there. So I started my own gig out the coal mines. And then when I wasn't working, I was firefighting, downhill mountain biking, snowboarding, or just enjoying the mountains. And so because I was really enjoying that for those 2 years, I didn't really go anywhere. And I stayed there and I saved an even bigger chunk of cash. So I'd take an 18-month surfing and scuba diving trip down in Central and South America, which is where I met my wife in the last 6 months of that, who is a native from California. So at that point, which is about 13 years ago, we ended up in California and we wanted to recreate this type of lifestyle. So we made a commitment with each other. We were going to recreate it. But this time, number one, we wanted to do it without our money running out. And number two, we wanted our money to grow while we were traveling and living this freedom lifestyle. So in the beginning, I actually tried about 7 different side hustles. I was doing multi-level marketing. I was trying the stock market, single family homes, a whole bunch of different stuff.
What's going to stick? Right? Something's got to stick,
right?
Yeah.
And then after a while, I realized I was just spinning plates, mediocre success. I was burnt out and I need to laser focus on one thing. Now, at the time, I had about a 17-year background in construction and construction management. I knew it was going to be real estate. What was I going to do in real estate? So I looked at multifamily, mobile home park, self-storage, wholesaling, notes, the whole kit and caboodle. And over and over and over again, mobile home parks kept popping off the page to me. Massive supply and demand in favor of mobile home park owners. Awesome tax benefits, getting to fulfill what I believe is America's number one real estate problem, and that's the need for affordable housing, high cash flows, awesome equity in there as well, and very little competition. So I was all in. So in the beginning, after I made that decision, I went out and 3 months later, I put my first mobile home park under contract. But at the time, I had a negative net worth, $2,000 in the bank and unseasoned credit. So I couldn't get the deal across the finish line by myself. So by force of nature of my situation, I had to go out there and lean on family and friends to raise capital to get that deal done. And I created a creative structure for financing through someone's retirement account to get that deal across the finish line. And then 3 months later, I was successful and got that deal across the finish line. And when that happened, two main things happened. One, I realized it's a lot better and I can move a lot faster if I bring investors into the deal. And secondly, I also realized that there was a massive demand for people to join our deals and join these kinds of syndications where they don't have to do any of the work. And so that was my first taste of syndication. So for the next 2.5 years, I rinsed and repeated until created financial freedom.
Bryce, what does financial freedom look like to you? Can you define that for me?
Well, financial freedom is when our monthly passive income is equal to or increases our monthly living expenses. So that's.
But how did you? So I always say that to my wife and I say, Jewel, I want to be financially free. And she's like, well, I already am financially free. In her mind, she's got enough money to pay the bills and do everything. How did you paint the picture to your wife? I mean, because people out there think of financial freedom as, hey, once I've got enough money in the bank, I'm good to go. I want you to expand on that a little bit. Like, what did it do for you? What does financial freedom allow you to do?
Yeah, well, that's where we're tapping into like the freedom trinity of financial time and location freedom. And the first pillar is actually financial freedom. Once we create financial freedom, I put myself in a position where I no longer had to work. I work because I choose to, not because I have to. And that actually enabled me to have a massive amount of time freedom. And the interesting thing is the first thing I did when I created financial freedom is took some time off and we had a lot of fun, but I'm an entrepreneur and I'm committed to growth and I like contribution. And so it's not like I'm going to be sitting in the Bahamas, sitting on cocktails for the rest of my life. So I kind of like ebb and flow and I come back in and I work a bunch and I go in growth mode and then I travel. I think a good example of how this manifested into our life was 2019. My wife and I, we went to go for a 1 week surfing trip down in Costa Rica. We were going to buy some real estate down there, surf, have some fun and come back. And then after a couple of days down there, we're like, you know, this is cool, but how about we check out South America? And my wife found a really cool ticket down to Patagonia. Next thing you know, we're in South America for 3 months. Patagonia, you know, jungle trekking, like surfing, going to Michelin star restaurants down in Argentina. It was amazing. And then after 3 months of that, my wife said, hey, I found some really cool flights over to France. How about we go over to Europe for a while? And long the short is we ended up turning a 1 week trip spontaneously into a 6 month, 20 country world tour. And while that happened, I was working about 4 hours a week. I created new investments to bring to the table and also launched a book as well. And that was just really an example of how that gave us the freedom in our life to do what we want to do.
So Bryce, basically you knew COVID was hitting in 2020. So you all jammed it in there in 2019. Is that what you're telling me? You're smart enough. You knew it was coming. You know what's happening, bro, huh?
I wish I had that much anticipation.
The timing worked out regardless.
It did.
What about the economy as a whole? Where do you see, you know, things heading in the next year?
I think we're going to get progressively worse. I think that for the next 2 years, we're going to see things get progressively more challenging for all of us. I think there's going to be more and more of a need for affordable housing. I think we'll see inflation keep going up or at least having a challenge with it. There's a lot of big question marks about interest rates. And so, you know, we've got a really conservative position that we're taking right now. We're still in actually a pretty massive acquisition mode, but we've got a very stringent criteria.
There's the contradiction, though. And this is where I think a lot of investors are. And I think we may be on the same page with this because I'm not necessarily disagreeing with anything you're saying. But at the same time, we're expanding and growing and finding better deals than we were 6 months ago. So that's the kind of interesting component to that is still growing, but there's a pullback. And I think it's also helping with the labor force as well for, you know, people on the team and things. You seen that?
Yeah, you know, and we've got a very unique position in the market as well. You know, we've had to adapt and change with our conditions. And so deals started to get tighter, cap rates got tighter, interest rates went up. And so we actually have our own in-house property management, asset management, and construction companies. or construction crews. So we've been buying like 50% occupied properties and then mobilizing our construction crews there, and then knocking out all the remodels, and we're kind of refinancing and doing that very quickly. And that's our kind of unique niche. There's not many people in the mobile home park space that want to take on that kind of complexity. And we're mitigating a lot of those risks by actually having our own in-house people that literally go and move to the park, knock out the project, and then move to the next park and keep going.
Bryce, how is long-term planning, long-term thinking impacted that business? Because your model right there is a complex model, but it is a model to wealth, and you're really controlling a lot of those levers.
Yeah, we really like it. We like to be able to mitigate the amount of risks that are out there. There's a lot of supply chain issues, so we buy all of our materials up front in bulk and get discounts. There's staffing issues that we're seeing, and so contractors shortages. So we're keeping all of that in house. We feel really good about it for at least the next 5 to 7 years. That's how far our investments project out. And but we don't know where interest rates are going to be. We don't know where cap rates are going to be. So we're adding in pretty big padding. If I actually tell you how much padding I'm adding in, you guys will probably say, well, we wouldn't be able to do deals like that. But I can do these kinds of deals because I'm actually getting 50% occupied properties and buying at a massive discount. There's tons of wiggle room in there. But we're adding on our refinance, if we're doing that in 18 months to 3 years from now, we're adding on 2 to 3% to our current interest rates for that refinance. And we're also adding on about 2% to our cap rates at the value of that refinance as well. And for our exit, we're adding on around about 3% to our current cap rates, just in case cap rates increase between now and then. There's so many uncertainties that could happen. We want to know that not only we can weather the storm, but we can actually thrive through it as well.
The interesting thing, though, is if you're buying a deal loan to cost right now, and it's going to take you a year or two to reposition it, and so you're going through, you're carrying it at a higher rate. But the really interesting thing will be is if you're getting a better deal now than you were, say, 6 months to a year ago, but you're paying a higher interest rate, the very cool thing that could happen, it may not, is that you get it stabilized. You bought it, you know, in a place where regardless if the rates are at 6% or 7% right now, you still will cash flow. Mm-hmm. Then if rates dip in a year or two on your refi, dude, that's... Look, we're good now, right? The deals we're doing now, we're good now if the rates stay where they are. We're buying on actuals, et cetera, you know, after repositioning. But that's where the sweet spot happens right there in the next 2 years. If we see, you know, maybe we're like below five even, you know, if we're in that kind of position, man, we're partying. That's a good day for us.
So. I literally just got tingles down my spine when you said that interest rates could drop like in the next few years. Like if that happens, it's like, it's absolutely monumental for us. Yeah.
I'm not a betting man, but I would say within 2 years, cause I mean, and here's the other thing. I was sharing it with Gino the other day. Like our agency spreads are the lowest we've seen in years because they can't get deals done. So it's a supply and demand thing right now. So you're seeing like 130, you know, bips over right now or something, where, you know, 180, 170, we'd be like, yeah, party on. So I think it gets there. We'll see, you know, where things go ultimately. But if that does happen, it's going to be a great day.
Bryce and Jake, I think we are always talking about market cycles. And I think, you know, one of our coaches, Bill Hamm, he talks about it with the three pillars of real estate. It's really an interest rate cycle. Things didn't slow down until interest rates went up. And then when interest rates go up, there's a recession. And when they need to spur the economy, what do? They lower rates. And that's just been the pattern for the last X amount of years. And that's going to continue. Now, this one, you know, when you raise 300 basis points as quickly as they did, you know, in almost record time, that gives a shock to the system. But, you know, in 2024, there's going to be another election. You know what happens before the election. It's political. They're going to have to drop rates. I'm not saying they're going to, but
dude, it's like clockwork.
That's what I'm saying. So when you look at market cycles, that's what ends up happening. The 08 was the run up. Rates, you know, you have to slow the economy down. Rates go up, market tanks. Then all of a sudden they're like, uh-oh, now we got to inject more money. We got to get some more stimulus going on. They drop rates. And it's just not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, because I think the rest of the world has a real big debt problem. We have a huge debt problem, but third world countries and the rest of the entire world has massive debt problems, and they can't keep rates at 7, 8, 9, 10%, or their whole world is just going to end up defaulting. So I'm an optimist when I see rates. But at the same token, Jake and Bryce, we're not buying these deals praying that rates go down. That's the key to it. I'm not saying, hey, I got to buy this deal like people were in bridge debt.
Exactly,
saying, hey,
right.
I'm buying this deal praying that rates go back down to 4. That's just gravy. That's as his Italians like
no,
to say.
No, they were buying bridge deals, thinking rates were going to stay in the threes and baking in 20% year-over-year growth on the top line. I'm like, dude, that ain't happening, right? That is not a sustainable model. So,
yeah, and I'm like you guys. Like, I prepare for the worst. Obviously, I'm expecting and hoping for better things to happen.
Yeah.
But I want to know if I can weather the storm, man. And there's a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, if things do go south in a lot of these different metrics, I want to know we're covered.
So, absolutely. Bryce, when did you have the, I guess, epiphany? Jake and I call it multifaceted multifamily. Right behind me, we have the book called The Honeybee. And basically what it is, all these different streams of revenue. We have the investment, and then all of a sudden, Jake starts a property management company. And then we start the Jake and Gino Education. And then we start the syndication company. Now we have a development company. And this show, The 100-Year Real Estate Investor, we're selling whole life insurance. Where did you have that epiphany? At what deal did you say, wow, this could be a lot bigger than just doing a couple of mobile home parks here?
Well, actually, I had great fortune of before I got into mobile home parks, I took a deep dive with T. Harv Eker, and he really reprogrammed my mind towards like financial.
Gino loves T. Harv. Yeah,
he taught me all about, you know, multiple streams of income. And so interestingly, in the beginning, I had one job, dude, one stream of income. Now, I actually teach financial freedom mastery now. And the last couple of months when I taught the last class, I actually had a list of my different streams of income. Now, actual different types of income. I've got about 21 different types of income, but then I've got multiple streams within those, which ends up being over 100. And that's only been, you know, like 7 years or something like that. So it really compounds. So I was fortunate to have that kind of like mindset right from the beginning. And I just started setting it up and adding it on since then.
So where can people get that mindset other than visiting you? I love T. Harv Eker, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, your financial blueprint, your thermostat and all that. Where would you recommend people? Because that is the beginning. It's all 80% psychological and 20% mechanical. Bryce can go teach you the mechanics on how to buy the deal, but it's all that psychological. Where can people find more information on that?
Yeah, I think if you do read Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, that's like a perfect place to start. We actually have a portion of it that we cover in our Financial Freedom Mastery course. We literally go through visual, audio, and kinesthetic reprogramming of our financial blueprint. But it's huge and it's massive. And it's like, you can have all of the keys and all of the skills that you need to know how to get mobile home parks. But if you don't have the right mindset, and if you don't have the right way to look at money, you're going to be sabotaging yourself and going back to square one, which is pretty much what T. Harv Eker is all about.
It's pretty much what you were doing early on, right? You're like, I'm going to make a few bucks. Let me go surfing, come back home, blow that, go back. Let me go into a coal mine, dig some coal, make some money, go back out. And the gold mine is pretty cool. To go surfing, blow it again.
He's got the black lung pop.
It's just a wheel. And it's amazing that a pizza guy, a drug rep, and a surfer can figure it out and say, well, this is our thermostat's broken here. Why is it only set at this number? How can we set this thing higher? And how can we continue to set it? And possibly, how can we buy more thermostats? Because now, Bryce, you don't only have one thermostat. You've got like 100 thermostats. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I've got teams working the thermostats for me. Yeah, and you know, that's why we're having this conversation, because we're putting it out there. Because honestly, for about 20 years of my life, in my first part of my career in the welding industry, I had no idea about any of this. And then once I found out, it was game over. But really, and you guys have to agree, the average person that doesn't really know about this, they're 3 feet from gold. And it's not that far out of their reach at all. And it's like mind-boggling that our structure of our system and our schooling has kept this hidden, because it's really not even that complex for people to be able to have some passive income, active income, and create financial freedom. I think it's possible for anybody listening to this podcast.
Bryce, can you tell me, how did you feel once you figured that out and you're like, holy crap, this is not rocket science. Why haven't I been listening to this? Why haven't I been hearing this message? How did you feel?
I was shocked, man. Like in the beginning, I went to a real estate meeting and there's all these people talking about how they can do a single family deal, bringing no money to the table. And then they do the work and they split the profits 50-50. And I'm like, this dude's like still in snake oil. I don't believe this at all. And then I get up after the meeting and I turn around. There's a couple behind me and they're in Tommy Bahama clothes. Look like they just got off a cruise. And they're like, hey, we've done like 5 or 6 of these deals. I'm like, you guys have done these deals? And I talk to these young guys. They done the deals. Everybody in the room had
like a secret society. Where the hell am I? This Freemasons,
like,
or what?
if all you guys can do this, it's like game over. I am doing this. And so I just like, I was just stoked. Honestly, I actually was really freaking excited and I wanted to just share it with everybody, which is kind of why I started speaking and educating and everything. Cause I'm like, guys, like there's this awesome life you can have. And it's like just over here, like come get it. Then I realized after a little while that it takes, you know, people have to, not everybody's going to do it. People can have the information presented to them, but we get in front of ourselves. And that's where we go back to, you know, talking about the psychology and the mindset behind things, because that's what can stop most people.
What are you doing when your deals are at 5 and 7 years? Are you selling? Are you refining and redistributing profits? Are you holding long term? What's the game plan?
We're buying most of our properties with the ability to hold them long term to give us the options. So we're buying like quality assets. And then we will either sell or refinance and you know, cash out our investors at that point. It really just depends on where we're at the market. Yeah. So far, we've actually been selling. Yeah.
Wow.
At the end of the hold.
Mm-hmm. Can you just discuss with us your cadence of accountability? Jake and I like to talk about weekly huddles, daily huddles, because you must have to have very stringent ones, because if you're going away for a long period of time, you need to be able to communicate with your team members. And how do you set those priorities?
Yeah, we've got weekly check-ins. We've got like weekly meetings that we have with our construction managers and our regional managers on the operations side and acquisitions team. It's like everything we're checking in weekly. And on those weekly calls, it's simple. Break it down into three sections. How did you like conquer the challenges that you set forth for yourself in the last week? What didn't you? What challenges are you having? How can we overcome those challenges? And what goals are you setting for the next week?
So sounds like a good coaching session.
Yeah, man. It's like, it's the way to go. You know, I tried it a lot of different ways before. Not only is that like effective for everybody, it's also like a very good use of time. And it, for me in my position, it actually allows me to stop having like a million emails and all that. It's like once a week, you've got me and like, and I'll answer all your questions right here and then, but don't bother me in between, you know?
It's such a great use. And you know, we may not be that sophisticated. We use like Google Docs to house the meeting and any notes. And so instead of me asking someone a question, I literally go into their weekly doc and I'll type things on there that instead of emailing them and starting that the evil chain back and forth, and then it's there. I don't forget it. So I know it's secured. Mm-hmm. And then we can go and, hey, what's going on with the water bill at property so-and-so? And it's there and we're addressing it. So it's been really nice from that perspective as well.
Beautiful.
I was sitting there with one of our team members the other day and we were kind of talking about, and so to give you a little insight into our organization, very similar. We have the development team, renovations, property manager, all in-house. And we have our team members actually invest on the deals. We don't do syndications anymore. We did a few in the beginning, but so it's all kind of in-house. And then our team actually invests in on the deals with us. And so it's all long-term wealth for everyone. And so this one person, it's, you know, probably going to clear $300,000-$400,000 this year, which is, you know, started off with this probably making 50. So it's really rewarding and just loving to see the growth and started asking questions back and forth. And, you know, Shoshana is just very humble. I still am frugal though. I like, you know, look for deals and discounts and things. And it kind of came up that, you know, I personally, it may have like something psychologically wrong with it, but I don't always feel financially rich, you know, for whatever reason. I still have that frugal gene in me. And I just, you know, I'm going to ask both of you guys right now, because I've never asked that to Gino too, but Bryce, I'll kick it to you first. So, you know, financial freedom, all that. Do you at this point in your life feel financially rich?
I suppose
it's a weird question, right? And it hit me yesterday, and that's why I wanted to ask it. Yeah.
When you ask it like that, I would answer it in no, because there's so much more growth to happen, and I've got like the future goals and everything like that. But then at the same time, I would say yes, because I have everything I need. I have a complete abundance. I have complete control and choice in what I do with my time. And you know, I've got my beautiful drum kit behind me here and I get to play that whenever I want. And I live an amazing life.
He's a mix between Step Brothers and Zoolander, man. I don't know where he's going to go next, you know?
It's kind of like a gray. It's kind of like a gray answer, really, because partially, yes, like absolutely. I feel super abundant, man. Like I feel super abundant in all the areas of my life, health, wealth, relationships, spirituality, having fun. But I've got so many more goals and there's so much more to contribute. And so,
it's a weird question, man. It really, you know, it kind of stumped me yesterday. And I was like, I don't know that I'm ever going to feel completely fulfilled with anything though, either. That's the weird thing. Cause I love, you know, chasing and growth and all that too. So Gina, what say you?
I'll give you a little intervention. What's going on with you is very similar to me, is when you're born, the first 7 years of your life is basic a money blueprint. That's your blueprint and you bring it on and you do things subconsciously. Like you are actually arguing with me about, bro, I'm not buying another mic for my condo. I'm like, Jake, it's $100, bro.
And it's I buy like $500 mics. All right. So I don't know what kind of cheap shit you're doing.
Here's my point. My point is I am very similar to you. I have to justify things when I spend something for a business. Like I buy these shirts and it's for the business. If I have to spend something on myself personally, it's very difficult for me. I don't know why. For my children, not an issue. If I have to make them comfortable, not an issue. If I need to buy another home or stroke a check, but when I need something for myself personally, it's a struggle. I don't know why. It's just, and I can do
it. It's almost more rewarding buying stuff for my family too. I don't know why that is.
So it's a difficult question for everybody. I feel very abundant. I'm very charitable now. I can stroke checks for that as well. It's just sometimes you feel that urge and sometimes it's that fear and that scarcity of, well, if the economy does go to crap, do we have enough put aside? And for us, not being liquid is a difficult thing because it's very hard. You'd like to see a big lump of money in the bank, but at the same time, you know, that's useless. So you need to keep reinvesting. And that's why people don't become wealthy because their scarcity allows them to say, hey, I'm going to save for a rainy day instead of saving that money to buy an asset for the rainy day. And that's the difference between the three of us on this call, where we defer having that safety of money in the bank, which is just an illusion. Instead of doing that, let's put that money into an asset. That asset will help us pay for that rainy day and it'll continue to create wealth. And what Jake likes to say, those little baby money soldiers, and continue to print them. So the answer to your question is I do at times, and at other times I don't.
It should be like balls to the wall. Hell yes, man. I feel rich as F, but like, it's not always the case. It's just weird. I don't know.
Can I add a little bit of color to that?
Yeah, please.
So I think that all three of us probably have that kind of frugal style of personality because that's what got us where we are. Like while I was in the 2.5 years of becoming financially free, I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything. I didn't buy any clothes. We went out for like dinner once or twice a week and that was it. And so, you know, I lived like most people won't, so I could live like most people won't later on. And, I think that kind of like frugal choice in how we're going to spend our money and being wise and like wanting to invest more than like splurging on stuff, is very important. But over the last couple of years, I've also like really been stepping into the fact of like, hey, abundance is putting more out, getting more back. And so we've got to be comfortable spending that money as well. Because if we're kind of hoarding everything, we're kind of choking off abundance as well. So I think 100%. It's like a balance of both.
Yeah. How was the fighting wildfires? I always kind of was interested in that and thought I'd kind of enjoy that. You want to share your experience doing that?
I didn't actually fight wildfires.
I thought I heard that. I'm sorry.
I was a firefighter.
It's so a little less like sexy, still town. Cool, but yeah.
It was like 5,000 people in the town. And so I was a first responder. So we were always the first to get there and
Did
all the paramedic stuff and cutting people out of cars and all of that. And I'll tell you what, for a 5,000 person town, it's like a freaking TV show, the amount of crap.
That's because they drink all the time.
Yeah, I mean that was crazy stuff that was happening, man. So it was
the smaller wild towns, you know, they're hitting the booze, so you got a lot of calls to be answered. So what about early on, any tips for scaling a company or an organization? Because that's a big challenge for folks starting out, because that's another thing that, look, they don't teach that in school. So hey, I just started a business, now I'm a solopreneur. How do you actually really become a business owner at that point?
I think there's a lot of hesitation in people outsourcing. You know, obviously no one's going to do a job as better as us. And if we do outsource it, someone's probably only going to do it 80% as good, but that's something that we've got to get over, because if I look at my business, there's absolutely no way that one person can do it all. You have to have a big team, right? Mm-hmm. So take a look at like the first things that you can outsource that actually aren't a good use of your time. Bookkeeping is usually one of the first things. You need to understand it. You need how to understand how to do everything in your business, but start outsourcing the things that need to be done that aren't actually moving the needle, that aren't increasing profits massively. You need to focus on the stuff that's increasing profits and outsource all the rest of it. And it starts with like one person. Go get a bookkeeper. It costs you like $300 a month, $500 a month, $1,000 a month, something like that, whatever big your business is. And then maybe you get a VA, maybe you get another person, you get another person. You'll know when the timing's right. And just keep outsourcing, because really a team is what makes all of this happen.
I'm laughing because when Gino and I started, it was rubber bands, paper receipts, and shoe boxes, and they were getting mailed back and forth, and it was a fucking mess.
So, well, every week I'd hear Jake complain about editing the podcast when we first started, and that was like the bane of his existence. And like,
and it was terrible. For
like 2 years, I don't know what the heck took us 2 years for editing this podcast. I'm like, bro, maybe we should hire somebody for that. Great, it was the best hire I think ever, bro.
You know what was good about it though? There was no edits because like I got to the point where I was like, you better just nail it because I'm not editing this shit. So it was like first take better fucking be right or just the shit ain't going out. So
that's kind of good though. But I mean, how good did you guys feel when you actually did it? You're like, man, that wasn't as bad as what I thought it wasn't be. All the things
every single time, wrong, every like, single time it just gets so much better. So, yeah, you should like just sub everything.
Yeah.
Jake and Bryce, the problem is that it's a muscle like anything else. We had Ron Carucci on the show the other day, and he even said, honesty is a muscle. What you guys are talking about, going out there and hiring somebody new, you do it once, it's great, but can you continue to replicate that? I think you have to lean back on the success that you've had. And that's the hardest thing, I think, for an entrepreneur, especially for myself, to make that next hire. If you're thinking about a bookkeeper, you probably need one. If you're thinking about a project manager or a flooring, a CapEx guy, you probably need that hire. Yeah, it's really difficult.
And it doesn't just apply to our businesses. Like once we get that established in our business, we can apply it to our life too. And we have people like, you know, doing all of the things around our house and around our property and things like that. So we can really like spend time doing what we love and what we really, really like to do. I mean, isn't that kind of like the best position to be in?
Yes.
Then we're in our prime. Then we're giving our greatest gift to the world.
Mm-hmm. Last question for me. Have you planned at looking at other assets? Or are you staying specifically in the mobile home space?
So we actually started off just in mobile home parks, but now we actually have a smorgasbord of recession resistant investments. So mobile home parks and self-storage, we manage in-house, our own property management, asset management, construction companies and everything like that. Then we do joint ventures with other operators that specialize in other asset classes like Bitcoin mining, automatic teller machines. We've got some Bitcoin teller machines coming up soon, car washes, refrigerated storage, things like that. So we're really, really focused around the recession resistant space with our main footprint. Our bread and butter is mobile home parks and self storage, but we like recession resistant assets, multifamily as well. It's probably you guys, it'd be interesting to see what you guys say about this, but I think that there's not that many deals out there that I think really can weather the storm that people are purchasing right now. So we're kind of standing on the sidelines. I really like multifamily, but I think a lot of people are paying way overpriced for it.
It's interesting because again, we're buying, this is all in-house capital. We're not syndicating deals. So that makes it even harder because you're going to try to acquire more, you know, and place the syndication fund. So the last couple of years, we've only been doing 100, 150 units a year. Mm-hmm. And so we'd like to do a lot more than that. But you know, we have 130 unit under contract right now, just, you know, great, great purchase price. We're very excited about it. So the last 2 years, the growth has been slowed, but we have a nice amount of, you know, capital on the sidelines waiting to deploy. If we were syndicating deals, it would definitely be different because we'd probably be like, fuck, we're not doing anything right now. But when it's your own capital, your own capital, and you're doing 100 units, and you know, maybe this year we do 250 or something like that, it feels a little better.
So, I think, Bryce, the other component to what we're doing is we interviewed somebody called Bo Burlingham. He wrote the book Small Giants. And for us, we realized that we are really happy with buying 300 to 500 units a year. We focus on what we call PPU, profit per unit, like you're vertically integrated. So we can't go out there and, you know, put 1,000 or 1,500 units under contract in a year, especially, you know, the last 2 years because of the labor market. I mean, how are you going to hire the people? Your system's going to go to crap. So we've had to grow intelligently. And we always hear the smart entrepreneurs telling us never outgrow your infrastructure. And we're always afraid of doing that. And I think in the next 12 to 18 months, there will be deals. People have overbought. I think people who are just talking about 8-10% rent growth, that's going to be like 1-2% in the next couple of years in certain markets. So I think there's going to be opportunities there as well. So we need to be selective and buy really good deals that we're willing to hold for the longer term, because that's our specific model. And if a deal comes out there that's really big and we need to syndicate it, we're more than happy to do that. But you know, the last couple of years, like Jake said, our biggest deal has been 120 units. If this year we get another 300 or 400 unit deal that we can't take down internally, absolutely going to syndicate that deal.
Yeah, I'm like you guys. I'm in this for the long term. I mean, I syndicate all my deals, so we do it through investor capital, and so that reputation is like really freaking important.
Yeah,
I want to leave a really good taste in everybody's mouth, and we've got 100% track record of exceeding our projections on all of our mobile home park investments. We want to keep that up. So I'd much rather like pass on deals and be kind of sitting on the sidelines than doing tons of deals and being like the number one mobile home park owner operator that's doing average deals. I'm just not interested in that. I'd rather have quality for sure.
Yeah. We've also been dabbling with land. We bought 130 acres or something like that in the last year or so too for our development team. So we can do some build to rent stuff because it's just done really well in our market. So we've diversified there a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
But so Bryce, what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you if they're interested in potential syndications, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Check us out at investcultivate.com, and cultivate is spelt with the number 8. So it's investcultiv, the number 8.com.
Gino, you want to give us a recap here?
It's really cool. I mean, he's had an amazing life as far as him starting out. It didn't look too good, Jake, a high school dropout. He looks like he's another unemployable Jake and Gino person on the podcast. We have a lot of those that just are not employable. They have to go out and find their own way.
Coal stained, Gino. He had coal all over his body. You know, he's black.
He's in the gold mines too, from what I heard. So he's got gold, he's got coal, he's working all these jobs. And I think the thing that clicked in his mind is he would do the work, save the money, go out and party, and then be broke and have to continue to do that process. And to him, very similar to me, he woke up one day and he met T. Harv Eker, and T. Harv Eker says, you don't have to do that. That's not the way you should be doing things. You have a financial thermostat and you have a blueprint. How do you figure it out? And then once he figured that out, within 2.5 years, he became financially free, started buying these deals. And it's very similar to us. He bought his first deal. 3 months later, he got his second deal. He figured it out. It's not rocket science. He figured out the mindset first, and then he figured out how to start taking these deals down. And then he had his own specific blueprint on becoming vertically integrated, looking in those mobile home parks, looking at that niche and getting really good at that. And then once he became a master of that, he said, hey, you know what? Self-storage looks good. I got a little bit of ATMs for the depreciation. That looks really good. I got some Bitcoin, some mining going on. I maybe even, you know, put my toe into the multifamily, but not until he became an expert in the mobile home park space.
Well said, gang. As always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's a G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.